Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 10, chapter 22, Krishna still has got his garments. That's 2, 3, and 4. Aplutyam vasi kalindya javane chuditirune kritva prakriti kritva prati kritin devi anarchunri pasai kati gandhar malya surabhi dir balidir dhupadi pakai uchavacha ischopaharai pravala pala tandulai. Translation. My dear king, after they had bathed in the water of Yamuna, just as the sun was rising, the goddess made an earthen deity of goddess Durga on the river bank. Then they worshipped her with such aromatic substances as sandalwood pulp, along with other items both opulent and simple, including lamps, fruits, betel nuts, newly grown leaves, and fragrant garlands and incense. The word balidhir in this verse indicates offerings of clothing, ornaments, food, and so on. That's number four. Katyayani Mahamaye.
Katyayani Mahamaye.
Mahayogni Adishvari.
Mahayogni Adishvari.
Nanda Gopasutam Devi.
Nanda Gopasutam Devi.
Patime Kurute Namaha.
Patime Kurute Namaha.
Iti Mantram Japatyasta.
Iti Mantram Japatyasta.
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha.
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha.
Katyayani Mahamaye.
Katyayani Mahamaye.
Mahayo Nishvari,
Mahayogi Nishvari,
Nanda
Gopasutam Devi,
Patime Kurute Namaha,
Patime Kurute Namaha,
Iti Mantram Japantyasta,
Iti Mantram Japantyasta,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Katyayani Mahamaye,
Katyayani Mahamaye,
Mahayoginyadishvare,
Mahayoginyadishvare,
Nanda Gopasutam Devi,
Nanda Gopasutam Devi,
Padime Kurute Namaha,
Padime Kurute Namaha,
Iti Mantram Japantyasta,
Iti Mantram Japantyasta,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Katyayani Mahamaye,
Katyayani Mahamaye,
Mahayogi Adishvare,
Mahayogi Adishvare,
Nanda Gopasutam Devi,
Nanda Gopasutam Devi, Patime Gurute
Namaha,
Ita Mantram Japantasya,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha,
Katyayani Mahamaye,
Mahayogeni Adishvare,
Nanda
Gopasutam Devi,
Patime Kurute Namaha,
Patime Kurute Namaha, Iti mantram japantasya. Utam chakru kamarita.
Kachayani mahamaye.
Kachayani mahamaye.
Mahayogina dishvari.
Mahayogina dishvari.
Nanda
gopasutam devi.
Katime guru te namah.
Katime guru te namah.
Iti mantram
japantasya.
Ujam chakru kamarita.
Ujam chakru kamarita. Katayani mahamaye. Mahayogina dishvari. Nanda gopasutam devi. Iti mantram japantasya. Pujam chakro kamarita.
Katyayani.
Katyayani.
Oh, God is Katyayani.
Oh, God is Katyayani.
Mahamaye.
Mahamaye.
Oh, great potency.
Oh, great potency.
Mahayogini.
Mahayogini.
Oh, possessor of great mystic power.
Oh, possessor of great mystic power.
Adishwari.
Adishwari.
Oh, mighty controller.
Oh, mighty controller.
Nandagopasutam.
Nandagopasutam.
The son of Maharaja Nanda.
The son of Maharaja Nanda.
Devi.
Devi.
Oh, goddess.
Oh, goddess.
Patim.
Patim.
The husband.
The husband.
Me.
My. My.
Guru.
Guru.
Please may.
Please may.
Te. Unto you.
Unto you.
Namaha.
Namaha.
My obeisances.
My obeisances.
Iti.
Iti.
With this words.
With this words.
Mantram.
Mantram.
The hymn.
The hymn.
Japantyaha.
Japantyaha.
Chanting.
Chanting.
Taha.
Taha.
They.
They.
Puja.
Puja.
Worship.
Worship.
Chakruhu.
Chakruhu.
Perform.
Perform.
Kumarikaha.
Kumarikaha.
The unmarried girls.
The unmarried girls.
Translation. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra. O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Maharaja Nanda my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. Full port. According to various acharyas, the goddess Durga mentioned in this verse is not the illusory energy of Krishna called Maya, but rather the internal potency of the Lord known as Yogamaya. The distinction between the internal and external or illusory potency of the Lord is described in Narada Pancharatra in conversation between Shruti and Vidya. Janatyeka parakantam shaiva durga tadatmika yapara parama shaktir mahavishnu svarupini yasya vidyana matrina param nam paramatmanaha muhurta deva devasya praptir bhavati nanyatha. Ekayam prema sarva sva sva bhava gokuleshvari anyatula bhogyeya adideva kileshvaraha asya avarika shaktir maha maya kileshvari yog yaya mugdham jagat sarvam sarve deha bhi maninaha. Translation: the Lord inferior potency known as Durga is dedicated to his loving service. Being the Lord's potency, this inferior energy is no different from him. There is another superior potency whose form is on the same spiritual level as that God himself. Simply simply by scientifically understanding this supreme potency, one can immediately achieve the supreme soul of all souls, who is the Lord of all lords. There is no other process to achieve him. That supreme potency of the Lord is known as Gokuleshwari, the goddess of Gokula. Her nature is to be completely absorbed in love of God. And through her, one can easily obtain the primeval Lord, the Lord of all that be. The internal potency of the Lord has the covering potency, known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within this universe falsely identifies himself with the material body. From the above, we can understand that the internal and external, or superior and inferior potencies of the Supreme Lord are personified as Yogamaya and Mahamaya, respectively. The name Durga is sometimes used to refer to the internal, superior potency as stated in the Pancharatra. In all the mantras used to worship Krishna, the presiding deity is known as Durga. Thus, in the transcendental sound vibrations glorifying and worshipping the Absolute Truth, Krishna, the presiding deity of the particular mantra or hymn is called Durga. The name Durga therefore refers also to that personality who functions as the internal potency of the Lord and who is thus on the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure transcendental existence. This internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister, known as Ekanamsha or Subhadra. This is the Durga who was worshipped by the gopis in Vrindavan. Several acharyas have pointed out that ordinary people are sometimes bewildered and think that the names Mahamaya and Durga refer exclusively to the external potency of the Lord. Even if we accept hypothetically that the gopis were worshipping the external Maya, there is no fault on their part, since in their pastimes of loving Krishna, they were acting as ordinary members of society. Srila Prabhupada comments in this regard: the Vaishnavas generally do not worship any demigods. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has strictly forbidden all worship of the demigods for anyone who wants to advance in pure devotional service. Yet the gopis, who are beyond compare in their affection for Krishna, were seen to worship Durga. The worshippers of demigods are sometimes mentioned that the gopis also worship goddess Durga, but we must understand the purpose of the gopis. Generally, people worship goddess Durga for some material benediction. Here, the gopis could adopt any means to satisfy or serve Krishna. That was the super excellent characteristic of the gopis. They worship goddess Durga completely for 1 month in order to have Krishna as their husband. Every day they pray for Krishna, the son of Maharajananda, to become their husband. The conclusion is that a sincere devotee of Krishna will never imagine any material quality to exist in the transcendental gopis, who are the topmost exalted devotees of the Lord. The only motivation in all their activities was simply to love and satisfy Krishna. And if we foolishly consider their activities to be mundane in any way, it will be impossible for us to understand Krishna consciousness. Katyayani Mahamahi Mahayogi Nyavishwari Nandagopa Sutam Devi Patim Me Kurun Tena Maha Iti Mantram Japantya Sta Ujjam Chakru Kumarikaha. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra: O Goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaja my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutanishu Mati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachari Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschatya Deshatari Vanchakalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Paditana Bhavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So we see here that gopis are worshipping goddess Durga. And according to the principle enunciated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Yadyata Charati Sheshtas Tatate Vetarajana, some people take it as the reason for them to worship demigods. They say, goddess worship Durga. Rukmini Devi, she also worshiped Durga. Before going to the marriage ceremony, Rukmini Devi went to the temple of Durga, where Krishna kidnapped her. And she worshiped, she made a puja for this. And of course in the purport, was very elaborately described why they worshiped Durga. The first reason is that it was not the Durga of material energy. And acharyas, you know, they went out of their ways to prove this. They quoted these verses from Narada Mancharatra, and that this is the internal energy of the Lord, not external energy of the Lord. But then, of course, in the purport, the very important statement was made that even if they worship Durga, which is external energy, even for the hypothesis sake, we will say that they worship Durga, there is no fault from their side. Whereas if we will do this, it will be fault. So this is basically the subject matter which I wanted to elaborate a little bit. Why it is the fault to worship any gods, and why it is not the fault on the side of goddess. Why they can do this and we cannot do this. With so due respect to us. So the first of all, Prabhupada, he writes in the Krishna book, in this chapter of marriage with Rukmini Devi, that worship of demigods is condemned, but not forbidden. Of course, here he says that Narottam Das Thakur has forbade this. Why has forbidden this? Why? Because it's condemned, but it's not forbidden in a sense because different people have different adhikars. And for some people, they have material desires. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna very disparagingly refers to the worshippers of demigods, you know, that their vritta jnana, their intelligence is lost. And he says that they're doing this just because they want quick results. There is a little nice story in this regard about one man who came to the marketplace with a big murti of Lord Vishnu. And there's a proper Vaishya, he started advertising his goods. He said, this is the Supreme Lord himself, please take it. You can fulfill all your desires, please take it, take it, take it. You know, very cheaply. It's on sale. Take it, you worship the Supreme Lord and he will fulfill your desires. Somebody approached him and said, my dear sir, if he can fulfill all your desires, why do you sell him? Why don't you give him at all? He says, yes, he can fulfill all my desires, but it will be after some time, but I need money now. That's the reason why I sell. So that's exactly the reason which Krishna states in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when he says that all these foolish people, because they want quick results, because they really want very quick kind of ways, short ways, shortcuts. You know, every one of us, they fall in the way of the less resistance. You know? And because we want these, you know, simple ways, not knowing foolishly enough that we have to pay anyway for everything. And so the people, they tend to worship demigods. Because another reason is that demigods are obliged to do if you worship them. If you worship them with a particular reason in mind, and you really meditate on this reason, and you really want to achieve this reason, and you worship them and worship them, ultimately they have to fulfill your desire. How, no matter how foolish it is, it may be the most foolish desire, but if you want it, they say, okay, good. Whereas the Supreme Lord is not obliged to fulfill the desire. That's another problem of worshipping the Supreme Lord. You worship him and worship him and worship him, and you have the desire and you worship him and he doesn't fulfill the desire. Or fulfill it in a very strange way, and you don't know what to do with this. There is another very nice story in this context which I heard. This is from India, from the British rule in India. There was one yogi who was sitting in the forest, and he was meditating on being God, because this was the favorite meditation. I'm God, I'm God. The sun rises because of me, because of my order. So So he was sitting, wasting his life on this kind of meditation. And at one point, he got a severe pain in the stomach. Immediately he forgot that he is God. And he started praying to God, oh my dear Lord. And he thought, I need to go to the doctor. I really need to go to the doctor. And there is a city, but the city or town nearby, but it's rather, you know, far away. So please give me the horse. He started praying to God, my dear Lord, please give me the horse so that I can ride safely to this town. And sure enough, in the meantime, the British gentleman was riding in the same forest on a horse. And the horse was pregnant. And because the horse was pregnant, she gave birth to a little horse. Little, how do you call it? Little horse? Little horse. Huh? So that this little baby horse was born immediately, and the little baby horse was too helpless to walk. And this British man, he saw this foolish yogi who was sitting there praying to the Lord, please give me the horse. And he immediately ordered, hey, you yogi, you know, because he was Indian, and Indians were supposed to fulfill all the orders of British. But he said, oh, you foolish Indian, foolish, you know, native man, you know, you take this horse and you bring this horse with me to the town. So, and then the yogi, he realized that God fulfilled my desire. I was praying for the horse. He gave me the horse, but now it's not that the horse carried me to the town. I have to bring the horse in my hands. So that's an sarcastic way of the Supreme Lord. When you pray for something foolish, and after all, why do you have to pray to the Supreme Lord for some material desires? All the material desires are being fulfilled by the law of karma. We don't need to pray to the Lord for this. And if you are so foolish as to pray, he may fulfill your desire, but in a very perverted way, in a very strange way. You wanted horse, please take this horse. And then condemn yourself for being so foolish. So, therefore, it is so, systematically, again and again said that one should not worship the Supreme Lord.
Oh, sorry.
One should not worship demigods. And especially, in our sampradaya, we're a little less in this regard. Because sometimes we go to the, temples of Lord Shiva. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, he went to the temples of Lord Shiva. He was dancing in ecstasy, saying, Vaishnava nam yata Shambhu, that Shambhu is the great, Vaishnava. But like in Sri Sampradaya, they're very fanatical about it. In Sri Sampradaya, the followers of Sri Sampradaya, they, if you go to the temple of Devi, you're a demon. It means you're a demon. You cannot even go. Somebody told me from the family were living in Kanchi. This is a holy place in the south of India. And this Kanchi, the city, is divided into two parts. There is Shiva Kanchi and Vishnu Kanchi. In Shiva Kanchi, you have only Shiva temples, and in Vishnu Kanchi, you have only Vishnu temples. So this person from Sri Sampradaya, he told me that they used to live in this Kanchi, but their grandfather, he forbade them even to go to Shiva Kanchi. Not even to the temples of Shiva, even to the part of the city where the temples are located. He said, if you go there, you're not my grandson anymore. Get out of here. So they're extremely fanatical in this regard. And not without a reason. Because, especially in Sri Sampradaya, this principle of ekantata was very strongly enunciated. Ekantata means you have one goal, ekanta. And this cannot be compromised. If this ekantata principle is compromised, you're basically losing bhakti. Because bhakti means you have only one goal. bhakti, you know, is being compromised if you have another object of worship. This is not bhakti. This is prostitution. If you have too many objects of worship, if you worship this and that and this and that and so many other goals is there, it means you're prostitute. It means you're not chaste. And because you lose your chastity, even your worship to the Supreme Lord will not be accepted. It's spoiled. You are not chaste anymore to the Supreme Lord, and therefore, you know, he doesn't accept your worship. This, you more or less lose bhakti in this way, and therefore it's so important. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes here this Narottam Das Thakur statement that you cannot worship other gods. Because if you worship other gods, you more or less, you know, adulterer. You are engaged in some illicit relationship. And because our heart is weak, we have this tendency, you know. Sometimes I know it very well, you know. We have now this big problem in Moscow. And sometimes I think, maybe we should worship Shiva. You know, we cannot overcome all these obstacles and difficulties. Maybe we should go to somebody who will help us to do this. After all, God is this. You know, worship God is Durga. So, you know, there is this tendency. And this tendency basically means material consciousness. Material consciousness means that you will want some quick results. And you don't want to undergo some, you know, tedious process of worshipping the Supreme Lord and remaining chaste. That's definitely a big problem. It is also very nicely explained in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, why it is so. There is a very interesting description there, which basically indirectly condemns demigod worship. The description there is the conversation between Yamadutas and Yamaraj. And Yamadutas, being defeated and baffled by Vishnudutas, are coming to Yamaraj totally frustrated. They want to vent their frustration. They're angry. Actually, they're angry at Yamaraj. You send us, you are our master, and we were defeated. And we were defeated because you're a bad master, basically. That's what they say. They come in front of Yamaraj and they indirectly accuse him. Say, you know, what kind of master you are? if we were defeated, it means you're a useless master. You didn't protect us and you didn't give us enough power to do our mission. You know, what kind of master you are? So, and there in this conversation, they ask Yamaraj this question. Very pertinent question in this regard, in this connection. You know, how many controllers are there? They say, if there are many controllers in this world, then it will be chaos. Because one controller will say, you know, you do this. And another controller will say, you do this. You know, and it will be totally contradictory. They say, if there are many controllers, then we can assume very safely that there will be neither reward nor punishment, or there will be reward and punishment, and there will be chaos. You know, one controller, one Ishvara will say, you know, it should be like this, and another Ishvara will say, no, it should be like this, and the Ishvaras will, you know, will compete with each other and will fight with each other, and all the subjects will just watch the fight between the Ishvaras. It's like the modern democratic system, you know. You know, all these politicians, you know, say, you know, I'm the supreme, and another one say, no, I'm the supreme, and all the supremes are fighting with each other, and poor subjects, they don't know what to do in the meantime. So this, Yamadutas in this conversation, they very clearly say that if we say that there is God, God should be one. Because if you say there is many gods, you say there is no God. Basically, if you say that there is many gods and I can go to this god or to that god, if I want to get something, I will go to this god. I want to get something else, I go to this god. It means you say there is no God. That's it. Because God is only one. God means one. There should be one supreme controller. And this principle which we have to clearly understand, and if we want to go if we want to do anything, we have to go to this one control, who is one God. Otherwise, we are more or less, you know, trying to, you know, to manipulate different controllers, go to one God, to another God, and ultimately we are ethics. Ultimately, the mentality behind this is so much condemned, because the mentality behind this means that ultimately I am the supreme controller, and I can choose to whom I should worship. So therefore, this worship to demigods is so much condemned. And again, yadyada charati shistasta tatayvetara janasa yatramanam kurute lakasta danavatate. Why do the goddess then worship goddess Durga? Why Rukmini Devi goddess worship Durga? Why, even why Lord Ramachandra worships Shiva? You know, so many other examples are there when the worship of Shiva or Durga or Ganesh is there. That has to be very clearly understood, and this is the end of the purport, but this is where it is basically explained, which we have to understand very clearly too. What they can do, we cannot do. When they worship Durga, this is perfectly on the level of pure devotional service. There is no adulteration of pure devotional service, because, and this is the most important principle which we have, which is very difficult for people to understand, that it's not the action itself which is condemned or praiseworthy. The action can be any. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a very drastic example that you can even kill and be the pure devotee and remain the most pure devotee. You can murder. You can go around and murder anyone you want and remain the pure devotee. And there is a very interesting discussion in this regard. In connection with this, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how we should understand this? That somebody can do something and somebody else cannot do something. And basically sometimes people, you know, and this is why acharyas, they explain that you should not, in this, that you know, and that this is not example for us to follow. Or if it is example for us to follow, we should understand that they worship the internal energy of the Lord. But basically people don't understand the contradictory, sometimes don't understand the contradictory statement of the Vedas. Because in one place it is said, you should do this. And another place it is said, you should do something else, something different. Another place it is said, you should never do this. And people being childish in their mentality, they, you know, basically think, oh, this is nice, because I can choose what I want to do. You know, I just said here, I like to do this, and I will do this. They don't really understand what they should do, what they shouldn't do. Like sometimes people, I heard it many times, they say, in Ramayana it is said that Lord Ramachandra ate meat in a forest. That's indeed, it is said there. It is very non-orthodox statement, and you usually don't hear it in Bhagavatam classes. But it does say there in Ramayana that Lord Ramachandra ate meat. And in Mahabharata it is said that Bhima ate meat. Okay, you can say Lord Ramachandra, he is the Supreme Lord, he can do whatever he likes. But in Mahabharata it is said that Bhima ate meat. And sometimes people say, oh, you know, Bhima ate meat, so what's wrong with eating meat? Bhima is a pure devotee. He's the most pure devotee. I cannot see meat, right? Or sometimes people say so many other foolishness, you know, and then, because there is this huge corpus of Vedic literature and so many statements are there. And basically you can you know, justify any actions of yourself. If you want to do this, you can find some praman, some proof for this. If you can do this, you can find another praman. So basically there is a very interesting understanding which we have very clearly established in our minds, how to deal with all these statements. what we should do, what we shouldn't do. Because sometimes we may get delusion, you know. We can also see that in different occasions Srila Prabhupada gave sometimes contradictory recommendations or instructions. So this is all very nicely explained in 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Krishna himself in his discussion with Uddhava. This is 20th chapter of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which starts from a very interesting statement of Lord Krishna in the 19th chapter. The 19th chapter ends with the statement. Uddhava asked Lord Krishna, what is good, what is bad, what is guna, what is dosha, what is the fault and what is the vice and what is the piety? What is the piety? Please tell me, what is pious and what is impious? So Lord Krishna says a very interesting statement. He says, when you see guna dosha drishir dosha, this is dosha, this is fault. If you see that this is good and this is bad, this is fault by definition. This is pap, this is sin. And if you don't see it, guna and dosha, if you don't see guna and dosha, if you see this equal as guna and dosha, this is guna, this is piety. He gives this amazing definition of guna and dosha. This is, if you don't see good and bad, this is guna. You know, how is that? Because always we say that discrimination has to be there, you have to develop discrimination, this is good, this is bad, you know, and you know, this is very bewildering statement. So Uddhava, he asked this question in the beginning of 20th chapter, you know, how is that? He said, my dear Lord, you yourself told in the Vedas that this is good, this is bad. This is your own statement. And we're supposed to follow the Vedas, right? We're supposed to be the followers of the Vedas. And you said this is good, this is bad. And now you say that if you say that this is good, this is bad, this is bad. That this is in itself is the fault. How is that? You know, Uddhava said, I cannot understand this. How we can achieve anything in this world if we don't see that this is good, this is bad? How we can achieve? You yourself said in the Vedas that this is heaven and this is hell. This will lead you to heaven, this will lead you to hell. You know, what you're doing, you're bewildering me totally. You know, I refuse to say anything in this regard. And then, from this question of Uddhava, the very interesting discussion or explanation of Lord Krishna starts of different path. And in gist, there is no time to describe this and there is no use basically. But in gist, he makes a very important statement at the end of this chapter after describing this. He says that guna or the piety is something which is in according to your adhikara. You have to know very clearly who you are and where you are at. And if you know your adhikar, your status in this life, if you know who you are, you should act accordingly. For somebody, you know, he can kill anyone. And for somebody, he shouldn't kill even an ant. He should try to avoid killing little ant. For somebody it's good to do this, and for somebody it's not good to do this. So basically, all these contradictory statements of the Vedas are there only because there are different grades of people. And we have to very clearly know, not just we whimsically go to something which we like and take the instruction of the Vedas which suits my particular conditioning and my particular sinful inclination, and you know, follow this instruction of the Vedas and saying that this is the proof, this is Praman. The basic thing which is very important for us to understand is that we have to know our adhikar, our status, our situation in life, and we have to very clearly follow the prescriptions of the Vedas according to our avatar. You know, because and basically it is said that if you have material desires, this is one adhikar, this is one qualification, which is, I can very safely assume, is, you know, applicable to at least some of us. Maybe there are somebody who doesn't have any material desire. Not to embarrass anyone, I will not ask who has material desires. And this particular chapter of Uddhava Gita, Lord Krishna says, if you have even traces of material desires, even if you have little traces of material desires, it means you have to follow rules and regulations of the Vedas, of the strict and pure sattvic life of the Vedas. And if you follow this, then gradually you will reach the level of perfection. And on the level of perfection, there is no rules and regulations which is applicable to you. And you have to very clearly see that if somebody doesn't have even trace of material desires, he can do whatever he likes. Like gopis, they don't have traces of material desires. Their heart is totally pure. They can worship, I don't know, they can worship Jehovah. It will not be a deviation of... They can become Jehovah Witnesses. It will not be, or Mormons. And it will not be a deviation of the pure bhakti, because their heart is totally pure. For them, there is no rules to follow. There is no rules and regulations. The last statement of this purport is that if we don't understand this, and if we try to ascribe to what is any mundane kind of inclinations, we cannot understand Krishna consciousness. To understand Krishna consciousness, we have to understand that there is this pure state of consciousness in which whatever you do will be pure bhakti. It will be total, complete, absolute pure bhakti, because the motivation is so overwhelmingly pure. And for this particular situation, there is no rules and regulations. But if you have material desires, if you have even a little trace of material desires, and accordingly, you know, the more material desires you have, the more strictly you have to follow, try to follow the rules and regulations of the Vedas. But if you have material desires, this is your adhikar, this is your situation. And therefore, in one sense, it means that you're not eligible to bhakti. Then in this chapter of Uddhava Gita, the eligibility is being described. And it is said that eligibility for bhakti, of course, is shraddha. The adhikar or eligibility for bhakti is being described as shraddha, as faith in Krishna Katha. And if somehow or other you have this faith in Krishna Katha, faith in Srimad Bhagavatam and faith in Bhagavad Gita, you are eligible for bhakti, no doubt about it. But at the same time, if you still have the traces of material desire within your life, for you there is so many rules and regulations, four regulative principles is there, and, you know, you have to chant prescribed number of rounds, you have to follow Ekadashi. Gopis didn't follow Ekadashi. Gopis didn't follow this, and there is this, there was this interesting episode in our history about this Harivamsa, Harivamsa Goswami, or whatever, who is the founder of Valabi Sampradaya, Radha Valabha Temple in Vrindavan. And he was a disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And once he came on Ekadashi and he was chewing the betel nut. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami said, "Today is Ekadashi. Why do you chew the betel nut?" And he said, "This is a prasadam. This is Sri Radhika prasadam. I offered it to her. She chewed it. And I'm chewing it after her. There's no prohibition." He said, "Yes, maybe. Maybe it's Radhika's prasadam. But you cannot do it in Ekadashi. You do it another day. I forbade you. You cannot do this. I forbid you. You can never do this on Ekadasi. You should very strictly follow this. And he said, my dear master, my dear Guru Maharaj, I cannot. I like betulas. Cannot do this. And this is prasadam. This is pure. My motivation is totally pure. And he said, no, this is my order to you. So the next 2 weeks later, again Ekadasi, and again this Harivamsa, he comes in front of Gopal Bhatti Gaspar, and again he chews this betula. And this Gopal Bhatti Gaspar said, what is this? I told you not to do this, and you're doing this. Today is Ekadasi. This is simple. He said, no, my heart is totally pure. Anyway, I'm attached to this. And Gopal Bhatti Gaspar said, get out of here. I reject you. He rejected him totally, completely. And then this is explained. There is a funny story there in Prem Vilas about the end of this Harivamsa. Because I don't think that the followers of this Harivamsa Goswami, they agree with us. But anyway, the story is there that he was rejected by Gopal Bhatti Goswami. And because he was rejected by Gopal Bhatti Goswami, he went in the forest, he found his own Sampradaya, his own temple, which is still there, which is quite famous. He wrote some nice songs. And then he went to forest, and some robbers, murderers came and cut off his head. And they threw his head in the river Jamuna. But because he was also quite a sincere devotee, and while his head was cut off, he was still chanting Radha's name. Radha, 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 Radha. So his head was floated in the river Jamuna. And at that time, Gopal Bhatti Goswami was taking his bath. And he saw this head floating down the river Jamuna, chanting Radha's name. Radha, Radha, Radha. What kind of head it is? And he looked more attentively and he said, oh my God, this is my disciple's head. So, and when the head approached, you know, Gopal Bhatti Goswami, he started begging forgiveness. My dear Guru Maharaj, because I made this offense against your lotus feet, please forgive me. And Gopal Bhatti Goswami, he couldn't resist anymore. You know? He said, yes, I forgive you. And he touched the head with his lotus feet. He said, yes, you are forgiven. And this, in this way, this Harivamsa Goswami went to the spiritual world. And Nityananda Das, the author of Prem Vilas, he says that you cannot go to spiritual world and achieve perfection unless all your offenses are forgiven. Even if you have little offense, you have to. But anyway, that was not the point. The point was that there is eligibility, and there is we have to do what we're supposed to do. And this is basically the prerogative of our Guru Maharaj to say, this is what you have to do. This is the rules and regulations which you have to follow. And no matter what is said somewhere else, no matter what is said in application with somebody else, no matter what Bhima did, somebody else did, this is not for you. For you, your adhikar, you have to follow the rules and regulations according to your adhikar, because this is the best for you. And Srila Prabhupada is the one who knows our eligibility. He said, this is what you have to follow, and this is what you cannot do under any circumstances. You know, and no matter who eats meat and whatever other rules are there, we know it very clearly. And if we follow this, if we follow according to our adhikar, then after some time the perfection will be there. And if perfection will be there, yes, there is no rules and regulations. We can see, you know, Vamsidas Babaji, he didn't have any rules and regulations. You know, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, they were very, you know, they were on this level. But we cannot imitate them. If we imitate them, it will be disastrous for our spiritual life. And in a similar way here, what is a worship in Bodhisattva Durga, it doesn't mean that we cannot do this. It doesn't mean that now, you know, some Mataji can have a very good idea and go to the goddess Durga and say, my dear goddess Durga, please give me Krishna as the husband. To chant this mantra. No, because this is not the eligibility. We are not eligible. We are not eligible to do it. We cannot do it with the same purity of the heart which is there, which is the natural condition of Bodhisattva. So that's basically what I could say about this. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Yeah, I have two questions. I'd just like to know, why do we actually have material desires? And why does Gautama wait to take the last life air out of us before we can reciprocate our feelings to serving? And sometimes we are on the verge of dying and still having this.
Who doesn't reciprocate with us? Krishna doesn't reciprocate with us. Because he's cruel heart. This is what Radharani said. You can expect him. He's very cruel. He killed Putanas, he's a woman. And he cut off the ears and nose of Surpanaka and his previous wife. She was a nice lady and she dead. And look what she did, what he did with Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was a nice devotee. He surrendered everything to him and he sent him to heaven. And she drove him. Because Yathagatava Vidadata Vampato Matranathastusaeva Naparaka. What he wants from us the complete surrender. And as Lord Chaitanya, our process is not that we demand or even expect reciprocation from the Lord. Our process is that we cultivate. And if you have this mood, you will immediately feel reciprocation. Don't worry about this. But this mood has to be there first. Asnishya vapadaratam pinashtam vamadarshanam marmahatam karoti vayathadathavam vidadhatavampato. This should be the mood, because if you want to cultivate this bhakti, bhakti means he is our Lord and Master. And if he wants to reciprocate, he is Swarat, he is independent of it. If he wants to reciprocate, he will reciprocate. If he doesn't want to reciprocate, you know, I'm still his servant, no matter what, and I will be his servant. If this is the life, you know, if I need to live few more lives in this condition, I'm ready to live few more lives in this condition. This is the mood or bhav which we have to cultivate. As far as the material desires which are there, the answer is very simple. Actually, our heart is not clean from the material desires, it's not pure from the material desires, because we don't want to leave the material desires. There is this nice story about King Janaka and Ashtavakramuni was this crooked in eight places Muni, who came to the court of Janaka Maharaj. Janaka Maharaj, he asked, you know, why this smile? Why all these desires don't leave me? Why do you have to struggle so much? Yes, 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 yes. And Ashtavakra Muni, he ran, you know, crooked as he is, he ran and he grabbed the column. And he grabbed the column and he said, leave me, please leave me. Capture me. The point is that we don't want. Deep down, we have to be very honest in this regard. That's the only reason why the material desires are there. Because it's also said here something to this effect. That sometimes, oh no, it's somewhere else. Srila Prabhupada says that people cannot perform pure devotional service because they're horrified at the prospect of pure devotional service. They cannot surrender to the Lord because they cannot imagine how it is to be completely surrendered. They still want to leave something for themselves. And it's somewhere there in the very remote corner of our heart, in the core of our heart, but it's there. And we cherish this, and we don't want to leave it. Because this is ours, this is our desires, and we don't want to leave it. If we wanted to leave it, Krishna would, you know, Krishna is Hari. Hari means he steals all our money. But because we keep it so secretly there in the heart, and it's locked, and we don't want him to steal it. So even in a deathbed, sometimes people, they still want to fulfill, they still want to keep their little independence. That's the only reason why Krishna doesn't take it, because he doesn't want to do it forcibly. And of course, if you do something very impressive for Krishna, then he may do it against your will, to take away your material desires. But otherwise, you just want to keep it, that's it. That's as simple as this. And you may say, oh my Lord Krishna, please take all my desires. There's this nice story about Saint Augustine. In his confession, he writes, when I was a youth, I was praying to the Lord, my dear Lord, please, please take away this calm, this lust from my heart. But not now. Please free me from this lust, but not now. So in the same way, we come to the Lord, please, please free me from, but not now, after some time. I need some more time to play with it. So that's the only reason why he doesn't take it away. We have to know it very clearly, and we have to honestly say it. That's the only reason. If we want it, that it will wash away. It will be washed away. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.